I'm Bob Franklin. Thanks very much for joining me. This is Like It Is. My guest is Amanda Henry, author of the book, The Financial Abundance Blueprint, A Black Woman's Guide to Achieve Financial Literacy, Build a Successful Career, and Break Barriers.
Well, first of all, you're a Bay Area-based corporate strategist. What exactly is that?
Great way to put it. So I am based out of the Bay Area by way of Buffalo, New York. I currently work in the tech industry. My formal title is a senior sales enablement professional. And essentially, I get to host workshops both in person and virtually that helps professionals at my company grow in a certain area of expertise, whether that's sales, communications, leadership, management, et cetera. I say I get to be Oprah 3 to 4 days a week, but minus the billions of dollars.
And you're a financial educator. That's kind of self-explanatory, but delve into that. A financial educator, what is that? How does that work?
Yes. So I'll say my day job is working in that tech industry, but by night I'm a career and money coach for young, ambitious professionals, young adults who are truly just trying to figure out their way through navigating adulthood as it relates to navigating corporate spaces and then managing the money that comes with it. And so from the financial side, that's anything from helping them with their budgeting to creating a debt payoff plan to savings goals and ultimately investing towards financial independence. So that way they have the option to not work in the future if they still choose and want to retire early or just to build up that nest egg so they can have a healthy retirement when that time comes.
Well, let's talk about the retirement nest egg. Had it not been for your ability, your strategic ability to pay off a huge debt, $65,000, you would probably not be in a financially secure position. But talk about how did that come about and what was your magic in terms of working that, getting that paid off?
Oh, yes. So honestly, I was like most millennials out here. We were sold that American dream. Like you work really hard in school, you go to college, graduate, get a good 9-to-5 job, and life should work itself out. And so when I graduated from the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, I had over $40,000 in student loan debt as a first generation college grad. And then I moved to a brand new city for my job, which added another roughly $25,000 in a brand new car. And so I wasn't doing anything really crazy in terms of making poor financial decisions. I was just a young adult transitioning into navigating real world responsibilities. And then I got involved in something we call the debt free community on Instagram. It's a hashtag that has kind of created a mind of its own where all these regular everyday people were just sharing their debt payoff journeys. And so I learned about something called the snowball method, which essentially means looking at all of your debts, listing them from high to low, and based off of the minimum payments that you have, you pay off the minimums for each, but the smallest one, you throw any extra money to knock it out, and you kind of get that adrenaline and that joy of actually like achieving something. And then once that money is freed off, you roll it into the next smallest debt and so forth and so forth. And so from 2014 to 2018, I worked towards paying off that debt. And within that time, I also made some career moves, got a promotion at my first employer, and then transitioned into a new employer to get more raises in my career as well. And over time have stayed debt free, thankfully, and then repurposed that money that was going towards debt towards my investment portfolio, which now put me on track to reach financial independence in my 30s.
Take us back to that particular point in time and give us a couple of take home points in terms of lessons you learned as a result of overcoming that overwhelming debt and getting on a positive track.
Yes, thanks for asking. I can vividly remember sitting in my apartment in New Jersey at the time and thinking like I did everything right. Like, why am I in this position? And you kind of have to have that come to Jesus moment where you're just looking at it and saying like, do I want to just stay with it or do I want to actually create a plan to get myself out of it? And I won't lie, it wasn't the sexiest thing to do to say, hey, I'm going to cut back on a few things to free up some funds to go towards this debt. It wasn't always fun to maybe work a couple extra hours in the office towards a big project that I knew would lead to like that promotion that would get me like that $10,000 raise. And knowing that any additional money I would get from a career growth side would go towards those funds as well. It was scary. It was challenging. But it also felt empowering once I started to see those small steps actually add up. And so, to your question around tips for folks, the first piece is don't shy away from your financial reality. There's no shame. It is what it is, right? Whether you got there by doing all the right things and just life was expensive, or even if you have some money traumas that led you to make some not so great decisions, you have to just face your numbers head on. The second piece is making that plan and being realistic about that plan, right? And so you can't budget to pay off $1,000 per month in debt if you only have $200 left over based off of your income and your expenses, you know, your bills and things of that nature. And so being realistic about what you can do with what you're currently working with. And then the next piece is saying, hey, if you want to get there faster, what other options do you have to grow your income? We live in a time where we have the internet and people are making a lot of money, either putting out videos, hosting courses, et cetera. Like, you're not bound to just your 9-to-5 income, but look at different side hustles you can start. Tap it into your natural gifts, your areas of expertise, your talents to bring in more money to just help you get to your goals faster. Once you start seeing that momentum grow, it makes it a lot easier down the line. And then the last piece here is staying consistent.
My little sister, single parent, raising a young high school, now a senior in college, working two jobs, challenging, stressful, disappointing sometimes, and she's trying to stay, and she stayed disciplined. I'd like for you to talk about or talk to that young lady who might be in my sister's situation out there, and how to stay focused, how to stay disciplined, and how to maintain strong self-esteem through the challenges that single young ladies face, balancing a career, college, after college, and work.
I want to commend what she's doing because it's not easy, and I can speak to her because I literally was her. My from joining from again mentioning I was a first generation college grad, and so I would say my parents did the best they could of what they had, but my dreams were bigger than their bank account. And so I actually was working two jobs throughout college minimum from sophomore year onward up until my senior year. I was actually balancing four jobs plus my course load and different extracurriculars. And so to your question about discipline, you have to know what you're aiming for and you have to protect that so fiercely. Again, as a first generation, my parents loved me immensely, but they never walked on the path that I had dreamed for myself, which meant sometimes making decisions that they may not have understood in the moment just because they haven't li had that shared lived experience. And so you sometimes have to dream big and protect it fiercely and block out the noise from folks who, even if they mean well, just may not have that understanding or that revelation of what it is you're trying to achieve. And then secondly, knowing yourself is key. I say self-awareness is a superpower. And it's so important, knowing your strengths, but also knowing your weaknesses and being okay with that. And then seeking resources, whether it's other people, whether it's knowledge, whether it's technology tools to help you fill in those gaps. And then more so focus on leaning into your strengths and putting things in place that allow you to be more effective and more efficient as you're going through this journey. And the last piece is just knowing that this is also all temporary, right? The sacrifices, that discipline that she's doing right now, it doesn't last forever. It's a short-term sacrifice for what I would say is long-term abundance and freedom. I was made fun of when I was on my debt-free journey because at this point, if you fast forward to 2017, I'm halfway through it. I moved out to California from the East Coast, brand new city. It's like you should be out at restaurants and going to brunch and like taking it all in and spending lots of money on experiences. But I had a vision. I wanted to get out of debt as soon as possible, and I stayed true to that. And ironically, there are people who are still in the same financial positions or even worse off now, 8+ years later, that were making fun of me for being disciplined back then. And it just goes to show not everybody has to understand your vision and your dreams. Only you do, and you stay focused, and you find people who are going to support you through that.
In your book, A Black Woman's Guide to Achieve Financial Literacy, Build a Successful Career, and Break Boundaries, talk about why you're focusing on women of color, Black women, and why this particular group is in need or should be reaching out, running, and getting your book.
Yes. So the Financial Abundance Blueprint, or as I call it, TFAB for short, it was written with my younger self in mind, right? An ambitious woman who are likely their first gen or from underrepresented groups, right? Black women, women of color, immigrants, et cetera, who have a great head on our shoulders and we just want to succeed, right? Especially as we transition from youth into adulthood. And so many of us do all the right things. We are really just great humans in this world and society. But then we enter into these corporate spaces or we enter into these financial conversations, and it's like a foreign language is being spoken, or there's a separate rule book, but nobody gave us the instructions so we can play it fairly as well. And so for a lot of women, particularly women of color, we've been taught to work twice, three times as hard to only get half much of that result. And it's because we're not keen to the true environment in which we're operating in. And yet we also know statistics show that these companies benefit from our presence. And women are actually better investors than men, statistics show. And so this book was essentially my gift back to my younger self of saying, if I knew what I knew back then, what I know now, how much further along could I be? I don't believe that as a millennial, that Gen Z and Gen Alpha coming behind me should have to get it out the mud. No, your big sis has gone through these things for the last 10 years, navigated corporate spaces and all of the, I'll say, the BS and the politics and the microaggressions and the unwritten rules. I've navigated and overcame that. And I wouldn't wish that journey on anyone if they didn't have to live through it, if they could learn from my experience instead. That's what's packaged in that book. The financial literacy piece. Time is our most valuable asset. I've actually been working since the age of 16. My first job was at McDonald's. And if I knew back then what a Roth IRA was and could be putting that money aside, because I wasn't a big spender, so I was stacking my little McDonald's checks. But that money, wow, tens of thousands of dollars left on the table just because I just didn't know and I didn't have anybody to teach me. And so this book, it has this vibe of a, I say, a 90s R&B album of side A is on career, side B is money. But in totality, it's just helping ambitious young women have a great chance at being successful and navigating adulthood without having to deal with all the hardships of the lessons that have to be learned along the way by giving it to them in advance. So that way they can take the society further and make it the place that you and I and other folks of our age want to see this beautiful place be. We know what it can be, and we know that the children, the youth are our future, but they need the tools, they need the rule book so they can start from where we have gotten to and take it further.
So can kids younger, very young in high school, benefit from this book?
Absolutely. I would say high school would probably be the youngest I would go with it, but definitely, because a lot of these themes are relevant to even how we navigate college. Right, when we think about self-awareness, knowing your strengths, knowing your weaknesses, your personal branding, how you're known across your collegiate group of peers, that's really relevant. When we think about job opportunities, right, we live in a digital age. And so, how you optimize your LinkedIn or create a digital portfolio or website, that's even more important now and for the youth to even start even younger. So, high schoolers for sure can reference this. And it's also kind of has a textbook feel to it where you read through it once to kind of soak in the entire playbook, but then you reference specific chapters or tracks for what you need in the moment for that particular topic or situation you're dealing with.
Let's move now to crisis leadership. And well, first, give me your definition of a couple of attributes of a good leader.
A good leader is empowering. And I would say, because if you're a good leader, it's not about you, it's about helping your team tap into their potential and letting them shine, and you just kind of helping them unlock that greatness. A great leader is self-aware. Again, that is such a big superpower. It's knowing where they shine and where they can, how they show up in the moment, knowing their weaknesses and where the strength of their team can help fill those gaps so the entire business and organization can be driven forward. They're also servants as well. I'll say servant leadership is huge, where they don't mind jumping in with the team to help solve for what needs to be done, and being humble enough to know when they need to delegate certain things because it's somebody else's superpower, where they need to actually take it upon themselves to protect the team as well. And then lastly, I would say inclusive, especially in this environment, that they're open to diverse perspectives of folks who look like them and folks who don't look like them across different ethnicities, socioeconomic status. age, gender, sexuality, etc. That they're just open to the beautifulness of what we all uniquely bring to the table because we're all fearfully and wonderfully made uniquely for such a time as this.
And Cindy Suarez's article, The Perils of Black Leadership, she states, and I'd like to get your comment on this, that quote, when Black people do make it to the top levels of leadership, they are overwhelmingly appointed in times of crisis. Do you see that to be the case? And advantages, disadvantages, if any?
Yes, I unfortunately I agree. So often, when we get appointed to positions of leadership, not in all, but in numerous times, it's to kind of clean up a mess we didn't create. And if you actually look even further down the chain, oftentimes it's those of us, even at lower levels, seeing the crises in their infant form. And speaking up and trying to help the others understand what's going on here. And we get shut down a lot. And it's like we try to save folks from themselves, and it gets to a place where they don't want to hear that reasoning until it's too late. And then it's like, oh, well, we know that this person probably already seen this. Let's put them in leadership to solve it. And then we're not set up for success. And then we wonder why. I assume in that article, you're going to see stats around how few of us are even in those positions of leadership. And once we get there, we're fighting an uphill battle. But at the same time, I've been fortunate to work under great leaders of color, and they come with a level of excellence that just can't be matched. It's beautiful to witness and to aspire to. And so we're still needed in these spaces, but we also know that when we get there, our seat's been earned 10 times over, and we're probably going to have to fight 10 times more than some of our non-colorful peers, as I'll say, but we're equipped to handle it. We're built to handle crisis. That's the fabric of the history of our people, to be honest. And that strength transcends in any space, whether it's corporate or otherwise.
And do you feel that the diverse background that women and other people of color have to traverse help them to adequately deal with crisis situations that maybe others have not been so successful at dealing with?
Absolutely. As a mother now to a 2.5-year-old young Black male, my goal is to give him all the access and privilege that I didn't have growing up, while at the same time making sure he understands what that means and knowing what it means to navigate without that privilege. There are, as you mentioned, folks who just you gain a lot from your journey. There's the destination, the shiny object at the end that we're always focused on, but it's the growth, it's the character development, all of that happens in the journey. And as I mentioned before, right, with the book, I don't want the youth coming after me to have to go through every single hurdle, right, where we can make it easier. And they'll have their own unique journey that's going to develop that character in them and help them grow. But for women and people of color in leadership, there is something to say about the struggles and the challenges that we've had to overcome and work through that have built up those muscles. So when we do face times of crises when we're in leadership, we are more equipped to navigate them because we've already done so. I remember having a manager quite a few levels my senior. We had a one-on-one and he said, Amanda, none of us really know what we're doing. And my jaw dropped. This was a white male and I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you're getting paid twice my compensation. You have the fancy title. What do you mean nobody knows what they're doing? And he's like, a lot of us are taking it day by day. We're making decisions the best we can and seeing what kind of sticks. And now, do I think that that represents all leaders? Absolutely not, especially those who are women and people of color, because we can't afford to not know what we're doing when we have access to those spaces. But it goes to show the original question that sometimes privilege prevents progress. Because they don't know what it means to actually have to navigate and turn away from the GPS of what you think you should be doing and do what's necessary in that moment, that might be the harder decision that other folks from different backgrounds are more used to having to make that difficult decision, knowing it's going to pay the dividends and create the results that we're looking for.
And do you see women who do ascend to these top leadership positions to lead organizations perhaps are seen as threatening or non-threatening to the male status quo? How would you respond to that?
Oh, that is such a great and deep question. From where I sit, having seen great women in leadership, the only time that it's threatening to the men they're around is if those men aren't secure in themselves. For me, I'll say some of my biggest advocates have been men in leadership that have raised me up. And so if the man is secure in themselves, they welcome that woman leadership. They welcome that person of color in leadership, that black woman, that black man, that Hispanic man, et cetera, because they know that's going to make the company better, make the organization better, have diverse perspectives, because the audiences that these organizations are serving is multicultural. It's becoming even more diverse as this world continues to kind of just mix up a little bit of everyone with everyone. And it's a beautiful thing. And so to think that just a core subgroup could make the most optimal decision when they represent only a certain percentage of the customers and audience that that organization serves is ludicrous. You need a little bit of everyone in those decisions, or a little bit of everyone having a seat at that table to make informed decisions that will represent the people that they're trying to serve or extract financial value from. But at the same time, we know that there are stereotypes, particularly for women in leadership, that we have to overcome. And those stereotypes, such as being too aggressive or being too bossy, too direct, are the same things that we know men get praised for in leadership. And there's been a lot of progress around that, but we're not there yet. My hope is, for that next generation, by the time they are in charge, that we just allow people to be themselves and authentically lead and create the positive outcomes that we want to see.
Well, we have one more question before we leave the corporate towers here. The systemic barriers that are just there, how would you suggest, or how do you see women dealing with systemic barriers? I know you just mentioned the stereotypes, being too assertive, too aggressive, and the other tropes that go with that, but the systemic barriers, how would you, or how have you seen people, some of the leaders that you work for, deal with systemic barriers as they navigate the organization to its top levels?
Yes, that's a great question. The number one game changer that I've seen is advocacy, sponsorship, and mentorship from men. And the reason for that is because the rules were created, I'm using air quotes here, for them to succeed, for men to succeed. They know how these systems operate. And again, if you don't have the knowledge of the environment and what's expected, how can you succeed unless it's through trial and error? And to get to that level, you can't have too many errors along the way. And so, having men who can pour into you, who can mentor you, who can help you learn the game and learn the other players and what makes them tick and what are they most receptive to helps. Because then, now as a woman in leadership, I can decide how I want to show up, how I want to do me, et cetera. But again, it's like playing a game of Uno, a game of spades, checkers or chess. There's rules to the game, and then you use your own strategy on how you want to play it. But you need to know the rules to even have a chance to have to be at that game board. And so mentorship and advocacy from those who are in that privileged position of power is key to then understand how you want to formulate your strategy accordingly.
Well, as we run toward the end of our program and very stimulating conversation with my guest, Amanda Henry, who is the author of A Black Woman's Guide to Achieve Financial Literacy, Build a Successful Career, and Break Boundaries. Amanda, when I was in college, even going way back to grade school, I can always have memories, or I can point to that one person, that one teacher, that one professor that really inspired me to do a little bit more. I'm going to ask you, name one or two of your mentors or individuals who have made a profound impact upon your life and your career, if you care to.
Absolutely. And I always love sharing this story. So, my first big girl internship was actually at BET Networks. And I worked for the VP of Consumer Insights. Her name is Carol Cunningham. And for me, again, as a first generation everything, that was my introduction into corporate life. I say I was spoiled to have joined BET. because it was such a beautiful melanated experience to be there. But to have Carol as my boss, who also then doubled as a mentor, I learned what Black excellence in the workplace looked like. I learned how to carry myself in rooms and host conversations. I learned the essentials of just putting together a presentation and feeling comfortable speaking in front of execs. And to this day, her Carolisms, as I called it, stick with me and shape how I am as a professional. I would not be Amanda Henry, the 10-year corporate vet that I am today, if it wasn't for Carol. And I always sing her praises any chance I get, because she single-handedly is the most impactful person I've come across in my career to date. And ironically, she was the first.
And my final point, take-home advice. What take-home advice would you like to offer to our audience today from your book or from this conversation?
Yes. So again, Amanda Henry, the author of The Financial Abundance Blueprint, A Black Woman's Guide to Achieve Financial Literacy, Build Successful Career, and Break Boundaries. And my advice is to, one, get to know yourself. Self-awareness is your superpower. Two, as you navigate corporate spaces, lean into alignment with your manager on what needs to get done and what does great look like, and map it out at three tiers. I call it your ABCs. So that way you're not always burnt out, but you're still serving up excellence in your capacity. Lean into your strengths. And then three, focus on cultivating your own prosperity plan and working it, as I like to say, knowing what your income is, what your expenses are, the gap in between, and maximizing that gap towards financial freedom. You do those three things, which are the three sections of the book, and you're going to be in a great position to not only thrive in adulthood, but to have options for how you want to live your life without the financial stress or the burnout from your 9 to 5. And I wish you all have a beautiful life filled with abundance, joy, and peace.
Thank you, Amanda, for your time, your gracious words, and your excellent work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.
My guest today was Amanda Henry, author of the book, The Financial Abundance Blueprint, A Black Woman's Guide to Achieve Financial Literacy, Build a Successful Career, and Break Barriers. I'm Bob Franklin. I'll be back next week with 30 more minutes of good conversation on another edition of Like It Is.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.